Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you'll learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining me today in this podcast. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. I have a great show for you today. I'll be teaching you ways to live a serendipitous life. I'll also be interviewing Michael Modzelewski, who is an author and adventurer. You're going to hear his amazing, incredible story of adventure. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but many of you do not know me as a composer. My first album, Consolation, was written specifically for people who are experiencing grief and loss. I like to think of this album like a book. Each original composition is written like a chapter in a book. And just like in any story, it goes from the loss that one experiences and eventually helps people find the hope for their future. You may purchase this album on iTunes or through any other digital music store. Be sure to download the digital booklet that comes along with it. The name of the album is Consolation, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you are currently hearing is entitled, I Was Wondering. And now it's time for self-check-in. It's important for us to be able to separate between what our body feels like and what our emotions are. Sometimes we think they're one and the same, but they're really not. So just because you may have woken up in a bad mood does not mean you can't fulfill the responsibilities that you have to do today. And vice versa, you may have woken up today and not feel very well, but that doesn't mean that you can't be in a good mood. So on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 is the best you've ever felt and 1 is the worst you've ever felt. Go ahead and create those two scales for yourself. For example, for me, on a scale of 1 to 10, for my emotions, I'm feeling probably about an 8. I'm feeling pretty good. And then for my body, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm feeling about a 6. I got some good rest last night and I'm feeling pretty good. So since I realize that both of my numbers are higher than 5, it means I'm going to be pretty productive today, not only my emotions, but also my body. So when you can recognize that there's a difference between what your body feels like and what your emotions are, it helps you recognize what you can change. Living a serendipitous life. Serendipity is the phenomena of finding valuable or pleasant things or situations that you weren't looking for. Often we will watch a movie and we'll get lost in the luck or lost in all those amazing experiences that someone has. For example, if someone is a waitress and all of a sudden she meets the man of her dreams and then all of a sudden she's this wealthy heiress. Another example would be someone who's down on their luck, does some heroic deed, which then launches them into the media, and then they find this new life, and then they're no longer down on their luck. So we've all seen those movies, and we get caught up in that, and that's one of the reasons why we love movies so much. But did you realize that your own life is also very serendipitous? There are many things that happen in our life which leads to another event. Now, sometimes there's some of those events that we think, wow, this is just amazing. I can't believe that I met this person, or I can't believe that I was in the right place at the right time. And those situations are obvious. But when we look at our life as a jigsaw puzzle, everything we do is linked together with something else. So we may have many encounters that don't seem that they're not very fortuitous, but they really are, because that encounter is a foundation for you to have another encounter and another encounter. And then pretty soon you have one of those really obvious serendipitous moments. One of the most difficult things is to really figure out how to live a serendipitous life. I've met many people who struggle with that. They say, well, I'm not as lucky as someone else, or I'm not as blessed as someone else. But the reality is we're all self-made people. When someone lives a serendipitous life, a lot of it has to do with being in the right mindset or really being open to looking for new situations. Sometimes we just get so caught up in our life that we don't realize that we just do things by habit or we do things by rote and we don't even pay attention to what we're doing. One way to really think about this, have you ever done something and then afterwards you talk to one of your peers and you say, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. And there was something in me that told me not to perhaps date this person or to do this certain act. And afterwards, we're able to recognize that we have this intuition, this insight. That is one of the most important things we can really develop. And when we don't listen to that instinct, our logic kicks in and says, well, this doesn't make sense and I'm feeling this way. And so I'm just going to go ahead and do it anyway. And then afterwards, there are consequences for those actions. For example, think of one of those times when you can think after the fact of that you should not have done something. What was it that told you that you shouldn't do it? Was it a feeling? Was it a thought? Was it an impression? There are many ways in which we have that intuition that links up with us. And it's just, it takes on a different form depending on the way the person thinks and acts. So we're made up of three different parts. We have our corporal body, which we all see. We do a really good job at keeping that in shape, eating well. Then we have our mind, which is our intellect. It's our logic. It's how we rationalize things. And we often do really well with that. We go to school. We read a lot of perhaps current events and many things. So we're very much aware of what's happening around us. But many people really struggle with the third component, and that is our spirit. Now, of course, I'm not talking about anything religious. I'm just saying that part of us that connects to the divine, that can really tap into what's right and wrong for us. For example, if we're going through something really difficult, that spiritual part of us will give us that faith, will give us that hope when a situation looks so dire. If our logic says there's no way out, but yet we have this belief and this constitution that we are going to overcome something, well, that's your spirit. And so when we can really understand how to listen to that gut instinct, that is what's going to help you be in a position to really live a serendipitous life. Of course, serendipity can happen because it's more divinely appointed, or it's the collective consciousness or the cosmos, whatever you want to quantify that as. For me, I quantify that as God. So when you can think of that time when you knew you shouldn't have done something, that is how you can really build off that. So in every single event we do, we'll know what's right for us and what's wrong for us. For some people, it just comes down to, what does their body feel like? Do they feel good or do they feel bad? Do they have a nervousness? Do they have some agitation? And when we can really check in with ourselves and figure out what that is something that we will always be able to draw on when we're in a new situation. That's one of the reasons why I have us do the scales at the very beginning of this episode, was because I want you to be able to check in with yourself. When you can check in with yourself, with your body, with your emotions, with your spirit, many different ways in which to use that scale, it helps you then say, well, wait a minute, why am I feeling this way? Or why am I thinking this way? Or why am I agitated here? That is the way that we can kind of link all three of those components together to live a life that is symmetrical, to live a life that is really well balanced. So I'd really challenge you right now to look at your life when you can think back on those times, or even in the moment right now, what are you feeling? How do you draw on what your spirit or what your gut instinct tells you? Because when we can really have that understanding of how it communes with us, then we can have much more serendipitous or fortuitous events that come around us. There'll be many times when well-meaning people will give us advice and we use our logic to agree with them because, yeah, that makes sense. We should do this, even though our spirit or our gut tells us we should not do it. And when we do those things which our logic tells us to do, which we feel is not right for us, then there will be consequences for that. That can be from the largest thing of dating someone to taking a job to buying a new house to the smallest thing of should you buy this particular thing or should you hang around this person. We have a lot of people around us, a lot of people who can give us counsel, but if it doesn't resonate with what our gut is telling us, then we're never going to be fulfilled. So I really want you to listen and be aware of what your gut or what your spirit is telling you, because when you can have that internal awareness, it will help you be in the right place at the right time, and these serendipitous or fortuitous events will happen. Your life is much more magical, much more adventurous than you know, but you will not be able to reach your highest potential in those serendipitous moments if you're not currently listening to what your gut instinct is telling you. So practice that today. I'm confident you can do this in every new situation, even use the scales that we talked about at the very beginning of this episode. Check in with yourself as much as possible. When you can really understand how your gut is talking to you, or your spirit is talking to you, you'll be able to accomplish many more things than you could ever imagine. I actually taught a course called Spirit, Mind, Body, the Perfect Triad. That is in the Lifeology Academy on my website. It's a self-directed course which breaks down all three components of your spirit, mind, and body, and then helps you put them all together to live a life that is symmetrical, to live a life that's very well balanced. I would really recommend that you take this course at your own discretion and at your own pace. It's one that will really help you understand how to live a life that's greater than what you've lived before. It's called Spirit, Mind, Body, the Perfect Triad, and you can find that on my website, jamesmillerlifeology.com, in the Academy. And now a quick word from my sponsor. For you, my listener, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. Many of you don't know this about me, but I'm an avid reader. So this is a great opportunity for me to be able to download any book I'd like to read, specifically if I'm walking my dog at the gym or even driving. So for you to get your free audiobook, go to www.audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. They have over 185,000 books for you to choose from, so I'm pretty confident you'll find the book you're looking for. So check it out today. I have a great show for you today. I have the pleasure of introducing Michael Modzelewski, who is an author, a naturalist, and a public speaker. He has an amazing, inspirational story he's going to share with you guys. Welcome to my show, Michael.
James, how are you? Thank you for having me on. Real honor.
Yes, thank you so much. Now, you've had quite an interesting life, and I just can't wait for you to share it with my guests.
Thank you so much. La Vida Loca, I call it. The crazy life. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and my dad and uncle were NFL, National Football League, professional football players. And the Modzelewski brothers, it was Big Mo and Little Mo. And my dad played with the Cleveland Browns, and my uncle, Little Mo, played with the New York Giants. And then Uncle Dick, Little Mo, got traded to Cleveland in 1964. They won the championship. So that's the last time Cleveland, Ohio has won a world title.
Oh, wow.
But the great thing about my dad is we never had to be him. He was such a positive fountain that he would come home and he would say to his children, the only four-letter word I don't want to hear in this house is can't. You can do anything in life if you put your mind to it and work hard enough. Wow. So with my dad, I had go, but I have an Italian mother, and she's really a smother. And with my mom, I had go with my dad, and I had whoa with my mom. She was sort of afraid of her own shadow, and I think all mothers are smothers, you know, because it's a whole cruel world. But her whole attitude was, oh, Michael, don't live, you might die. You know? She was so protective. Oh, I worry from the womb to the tomb, you know. I go, Mom, you can die crossing that street out there, you know.
Yeah.
To jump ahead, I'm personally responsible for like every gray and white hair on her head because of all the crazy stuff I do. So it's an interesting dynamic, that sort of tug of war, you know, between the go do anything and then the mother, no, you know. But my mother gave me my whole career because as a boy, 6-7 years old, growing up in an industrial city, every night she read me to sleep with great classic books like Grimm's Fairy Tales, King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, all the sort of universal mythical stories. When I was asleep, she kept reading. And it's been proven if you want to learn a foreign language, let the tape recorder run all night. Because I really believe our subconscious is like a pilot light in an oven. And there's always that part of us that's never asleep. So she put in my ear, my heart and my soul, the love of language, the sense of story. She really planted the seeds, you know, for me to be a writer down the road.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. And so now, like you said, yes, it's kind of her quote unquote fault, all the adventures that you've done in your own life.
Right. So, you know, even though my dad said, you don't have to be me, I wanted to please him so much that I tried him. And I was a pretty decent football player in high school. I'm not very big, but I was fast and a wide receiver. And I got a scholarship, but I made a mistake. I went to the same college he did, and my uncle. They were all Americans. And their team was number one in the nation back in the day. And, you know, there was a lot of pressure to live up to
that. Of course.
And the violence of the game, which is really coming under the microscope today, the NFL with the concussion issue especially, it really turned me off. And the poetic side, the writer side that my mother had put in my ear, that was sort of rebelling with how sort of Neanderthal my lifestyle had become, you know, being a football player. So I quit. I gave up a free ride, athletic adulation, you know, free education. And my father did not speak to me for a year because he could not understand how I could just give all that up. He said, I don't care, you know, if you just sit on the bench, you don't even play. It's like you're giving up an education that people would kill for. But there's a voice in my body. I call it the voice of wisdom, and it's saved my life more than at least 9 times so far. And it doesn't come from the top of my head. It comes from my solar plexus. It comes like from the core. And that voice of wisdom was telling me, you got to quit. I loaded trucks on the midnight shift with alcoholics and drug addicts at a grocery warehouse to save enough money to go to Europe. And I bought a Ural pass for 2 months, traveled all over Europe, and I saw that the streets were named after writers. There was such respect given for culture, for developing your mind and your soul. And in Europe, they respected the artist as much, if not more so, than the businessman or the professional athlete. And sort of the turning point, I'm, you know, keeping a journal every day, scribbling down my thoughts. I'm living on, you know, 10, 15 bucks. I buy a loaf of bread, and that's my food all day, just so I could get into all the museums and soak up that culture. So I'm in Paris, France one evening, sitting at a cafe in the Left Bank, scribbling in a journal, and a French couple sitting at a table across from me. And they, in broken English, they invited me to join them for a drink. And I said, oh, I would love to, but I just have to finish the sentence. And they looked at me and they said, ah, you're a writer. And they said it with such respect. And I was a punk kid scribbling in a journal.
Oh, you know? Wow.
Hardly a writer, but I just saw that whole other world, the importance of art. So came back to U.S., transferred to Indiana University that has the best journalism school in the U.S., one of the best. And I learned the rules so that I could later break them. I tried to take a creative writing course, but I got thrown out of the course. The professor pulled me aside after the first essay that we had to turn in. And he said, Mike, get out of here. You're a natural writer. He goes, I can't teach you anything. If anything, I'm going to stilt your style. And he was like a prophet. He said, you got to go live life. You got to just get out there. And he said, you got to go like, you're a wild man. He said, just go live on a wild island somewhere or something. You just soak it up out there. Get out of this class environment. And I was disappointed. I wanted to, you know, be part of the group and all that.
Of course.
So long story short, I graduated, moved to Aspen, Colorado to be a ski bum like for 1 year. I bumped into a woman, literally. Bumped into her back. If I had been standing 18 inches to the left or the right, I would have missed my future. And this was a woman who was an architect from Vancouver, British Columbia, and Geneviève, French-Canadian. And after she left, of spending a week together camping up in the mountains in the Rockies, a letter a day was coming, Michael, I miss you. Come and see me. So having no money, being a freelance writer, at that point, I stuck out my thumb, hitchhiked, and what an education. You know, in and out of all those cars, in and out of all those lives, hitchhiked over to L.A., all the way up Highway 1 to Vancouver, B.C., 2 weeks on Geneviève's sailboat going north in the inside passage to Alaska. And I didn't even know this place was there. It is so beautiful. It's yin and yang. It's perfectly balanced. You've got 15,000-foot mountain coming right out of the ocean. Glaciers. The wildlife is just phenomenal. Oh, 2 weeks sailing back to her apartment, bags are packed, due to go back to Colorado, telephone rings. And it's a man named Will Maloff, who lives on a wilderness island way far north that we almost reached on the sailboat. And he had gotten Geneviève's phone number 9 years before at a party. He wanted to take her out for dinner. And my whole future hung in that phone call, because 99.9% of men, when they find out there's another guy there, as a guest of Geneviève's, would have said, oh, okay, I'll catch you in another 9 years. To Will's credit, he, instead of, you know, hanging up the phone, he said, all right, the three of us will go out. So we went to Chinese Food. Geneviève was ignored. Will had what I wanted. He had Jack London, Call of the Wild.
He
played his Russian guitar on the beach, and the killer whales came in like a nosh pit in the front bay to listen to his music. He'd take his coat off when he was starting, and he'd forget his coat on a warm, you know, spring day, and the bees would start making hives in his pockets. It just was this paradise world that this man lived in. And I was looking to write my first book. Instead of doing short journalism pieces, I was looking to write something I could put my heart into. And I almost reached across the table, James, and grabbed him by the lapels to invite myself to come to his island. But of course, I would never do that. But he sensed that, you know, what I wanted. At the end of the meal, he goes, Mike, I'm in a hurry, got to go. But listen, I'm inviting you. Come and see my island. It's 200 miles north and 100 years back in time.
Wow.
So really, fortune cookies come. We're having Chinese food. And I mean, I'm not thinking anything of it. I'm so high. I'm levitating off my chair, babbling. I just pluck a fortune cookie off the plate, crack it open, says, you're going on a journey to an exotic land. I mean, do we need a hammer to hit the thing?
I know.
The head? But, you know, I'm going, my defense mechanism kicked in. I can't go. I've got bills to pay. You know, we always have the 100 reasons why we can't when that door swings open in front of us. Maybe it's fear fueled, But I decided to go for 2 weeks, and I stayed for 2 years. And it totally changed my life being in that wilderness up there. But, I mean, how does that happen where you bump into someone's back, literally, and then Will calls on the phone where he could have just split, and that would be the stoppage, you know?
So that's serendipity. Even going back to that couple asked you to join them for a drink, and then they said, oh, you're a writer. I mean, so many divine appointments of ways in which people were kind of leading you in the path and all those signs that were given to you. And then this as well. I mean, so it seems like more and more that you were being really pushed into that direction. And like you said, could it be any more obvious, especially when you got that fortune cookie?
And, you know, another thing, when I was living in Aspen, Colorado, they had a film revival of like great, not just Western cowboy and Indian movies, but real nature flicks. Mm-hmm. And there was this great film with Robert Redford called Jeremiah Johnson, where this guy that knows nothing escapes the Civil War, goes up and lives in the Rocky Mountains as a fur trapper. And man, did that movie ever hit my buttons. And I never forget, it was such a cold night. It was so clear, you could see the Milky Way, because, you know, Aspen's so high up.
Yeah.
And I walked out there, and I looked up at those stars, and I just beamed, like, into the universe. Like, and, you know, as you know, our thoughts are things. They're magnetic.
Mm-hmm.
And I just beamed out there. I want that life. I want to be Jeremiah Johnson, but I want to be him today. But where on earth do you find a wilderness that's intact, the food chain, the native people still there? And Alaska and British Columbia, that's about it, where you can still be Jeremiah Johnson, you know? And I never forget that. Just ask and you shall receive. It was like beaming it out there, sky high from seeing that movie. And I think in life, we have to know what we want. And then sometimes we have to ask the universe to help with clear intention.
Exactly.
It's almost like the universe said, okay, kid, we hear you. Give us a little few weeks here to set it up, you know?
Exactly. And I think that's the thing. I mean, you never would have had those opportunities should you have stayed at the original university, that where you had this whole other life that was already kind of laid out for you. And you had the full ride. You had, I mean, all those things in your life would have been completely different, but you never would have had all those divine appointments should you not have listen to that voice of wisdom, as you call it, and literally said, this is not right for me. And I think that's where most people really struggle, is because they may hear it, but they don't heed that call. And so our logic kicks in. And so when our logic kicks in, we think, well, how am I going to make a living? I already have a free, you know, a free ride. Everybody's going to have a different version of what that looks like. And for you, you really listened to that. And I can't imagine how your life would have been should you not have listened to that. I mean, obviously it would have been so different. But happiness is only derived when we do those things that are healthy for us and right for us.
To me, one of the number one reasons is to grow a soul. I mean, if life is school, we're here to learn our lifeology lessons, you know, and to grow that soul, develop that spiritual and the mental side. But it's also to be happy. And
certainly is.
How many people really are happy? I just feel so fortunate that way. Not that it's ever easy not having your parents agree with you, because no matter what stage we are in life, I think we want that parental approval.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my dad actually called the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, because when I stayed on that island and didn't come back, he thought I was smoking some funny tobacco.
Oh, goodness.
You know, he couldn't believe that I would just, you know, go up there and disappear. Because, and he said to me, and it's so true, before I went to live in the wilderness, I'd only been camping twice before in my life.
Oh,
I mean,
goodness,
I was so in over my head. I was like nothing on the resume. And unlike the TV show Survivor, there was nobody on that island to boat you off and send you home.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Wow. And here you were thriving in a whole new world, in a whole new land, if you will. That's amazing.
Well, you know, what really helped is because I had a lot of time to read, because those dark winter nights, it gets dark at 4 p.m., sun doesn't come up to about 10 o'clock. So sitting there ringed by the kerosene lamps, no electricity, like in that wild cabin, I'm reading a psychologist one night named William James, and this beautiful essay, Human Potential.
Mm-hmm.
One sentence, James, came off that page like it was written in boldface or braille. And James wrote that we as human beings, we lead lives inferior to ourselves, that we only live a small part of the colossal life we've been given in potential. Once in a while, in a newspaper, you read about a woman backing a car down a driveway. Out of her sight line is a child playing. The woman runs over her child with the car, panic, 5'2", 120, bursts out of the door, grabs the back bumper, and lifts a ton of steel up into the air. James concluded that essay saying we have the potential to be supermen and superwomen, but we block it with that disbelieving mind.
Yes.
You know, no matter how glorious the contents in a bottle, like if there's a cork in the neck, they're not coming out. So when I read that, I said, I have no experience. I'm 40,000 leagues in over my head. But you know what? I'm going to pop that cork. I'm going to risk it all to see if even an overeducated white guy in the school way educated can survive here in the native world and in the animal world. Kind of maybe reverse psychology. I kind of took all that fear and I tried to turn it around into courage or take it as a challenge.
Yeah, you reframed it. Yeah, exactly. And that's how we overcome challenges, by reframing it. So now, after the years that you were there, what happened next? What happened next in your life?
Well, you know what? Sometimes ignorance is bliss, because I wrote a book and it was really fresh, because every time I'd have a killer whale jump 20 feet in the air right over the kayak, or the northern lights would storm around the cabin. Like, there was nobody else to answer to or to chop up your time. So I would just write everything down in the immediacy of the moment, journal-wise. And then when I slapped it together, the timeline, I had my first book. But, you know, not knowing how the publishing process works, that you have to have an agent. You've got to be represented to get over that castle publishing wall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being totally ignorant, and the manuscript had fish blood on it and coffee stains and, you know, half scribbled, and typewriter, the W didn't work. It kept falling off. Is it just a lark? I sent it to HarperCollins Publishers, which is one of the biggest publishers in the world in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you know that every publisher has what they call a slush pile.
Yeah.
Manuscripts that come in unsolicited from idiots like me. And it's probably as big as Mount Everest and Doubleday, Viking, HarperCollins, all the big houses. So another one of these fluky things, there's an editor walking to his desk to have a sandwich for lunch, and he was Polish. And at the bottom of the pile, he saw this long Polish last name, Ojalewski, sticking out. He gave it a tug and said, oh, I'll read a couple pages while I'm having my Subway sandwich. And long story short, HarperCollins decided to publish that first book.
Wow.
That editor had to walk by. You know, the other manuscripts on top had to have the pole SKI sticking out of the bottom for him to grab that one and not one of the 1,000 others that were piled up.
Exactly.
So I guess the linkage was continuing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then this crazy thing happened. And a lot of times people say, what's your greatest strength and weakness? And I always say it's the same word, extremist. Because I'm either one extreme or the other, very little middle ground. And the worst part of the experience living on that island was the loneliness. And then I learned that the loneliness wasn't out of depression or despair of being alone. It was when something magical happened. And in Alaska, that's a near daily occurrence, that you literally ache for another human being that you can wrap your arms around, and you both can jump up and down. Because does something really happen? If it only happens to us alone, it's like we want it verified. We want it shared with others, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So no dates. There were no women around. In fact, the Alaska government about a decade ago sent surveyors out in the bush to count heads of the sexes. They found out that for every 10 men up there, there's only one female.
Oh, my gosh.
Fact,
wow.
The gals that live in wilderness, British Columbia and Alaska, have a great saying. They say the odds are good, but the goods are odd. You've got all these lone wolves mumbling to themselves and antisocial and wouldn't know the first thing to say if they got a whiff of perfume or, you know.
That's funny.
So it was no dates for 2 years. And Cosmopolitan Magazine, God bless her soul, Helen Gurley Brown, who started the magazine, died about a year and a half ago. And she took this little woman's magazine that was going bankrupt about 20, 30 years ago. And through her drive and energy, she put it into 100 countries, 87 languages is translated. Cosmo, I think, is the number one selling women's magazine in the world. And every month they have a bachelor of the month where they take a single guy, put his picture and email address, all that in there for women to write to him. So my editor at Harper and was good friends with Helen, and another woman sent in my picture, and I came back from the island to do some publicity, and I didn't even know that I was Mr. November in the magazine.
That's amazing.
And 5,000 women from Mongolia, South Africa, I mean, there were mailbags full of letters with every in pink and purple ink, with every I dotted with a heart and reeking of perfume. But James, it was every man's fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the master of the universe said, "Hey, kid, the candy shop door is open. Walk in. The lids are off all the jars. Help yourself to as many flavors and colors for as long as you want." And it was so overwhelming. In fact, there's a chapter in the book, my latest book about the experience, I called it Sugar Shock. It was like eating tiramisu or dessert every hour. And at one point I said, "I got to have substance. I'm forgetting names. It's just, you know."
Yeah, it's too much.
Too much. Yeah, because when you got that stamp of approval in Cosmo magazine, floodgates open.
Mm-hmm.
So what an education. And Michael Larson, my literary agent at the time, he said, "Dude, Sigmund Freud once asked what the women really want. Well, you got a shot at finding out. No. So why don't you study these women with the scientific method? Just like you studied the wildlife in Alaska, study these human animals." Of course, that went out the window on the very first date, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Promotions. But it gave me the title and the concept of the book. I love double meaning titles, like Inside Passage. My first book is the Passage Inside as well, the spiritual journey. And then the latest book, Wild Life, two separate words, is the life is wild, but it's also setting women as if they are wildlife.
Sure. Yeah, I get that.
But I mean, how do you go from an island where you're living alone and there's no women, and then you come back to civilization and there's this tsunami of letters, lingerie, and happy ending after first date and the letters? And it's just like, oh my God.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. You definitely lived a life of the extremist, that's for sure.
But you know what? There was a pot of gold at the end of the Cosmo rainbow. I didn't even want to do it. I thought Cosmopolitan, and I flipped through it at the dentist's office, you know, and it seems silly. But my editor, who, you know, very much of a pragmatist at Harper, she said, "Michael, you can't buy that kind of publicity. They're going to mention the title of your book and your blurb. My God, man, you can't live on an island. You got to sell books like they're boxes of soap."
Yes.
So the book was out there. The girls bought it. Sales were great.
Didn't you end up meeting your wife from there?
Yeah.
As well?
So the pot of gold, and I'm learning in life, if, you know, we all have choice what road to go down. I didn't want to go down it, but I'm learning that even if it seems frivolous or you have resistance or whatever at first, pay attention to opportunity, because not only, oh my God, it led to so much, but most importantly, it brought me a life partner. Because after dating my way down a couple mailbags for a few years, there was a letter that was so outstanding. And basically, there were no naked pictures. It was basically a resume of her success. And in between Paula's words, she was saying to me, "Hey, buddy, I really don't need you. But if you want strength meeting strength, call me up."
Wow.
It was a horrible fairy tale that was a concurrent theme through a lot of the girls. And that's Rapunzel, where a woman is helpless in a tower waiting for a man to come by and save her, rescue her, give her a life. I hope they tear that thing up and never read it anymore. But Paula's letter was none of that. It was like, "Hey, if you want an equal here," and a lot of men want to dominate a woman. You know, they don't want somebody who's equal footing or even more, or, you know, higher plane than they are or whatever. But I had been in some of those relationships that never worked because of imbalance. And Paula, it's just, there's no ceiling. It just
That's so wonderful.
It gets better and deeper every day. There's this whole universe in this person to, like, explore. And I never find all the countries, you know. And we can be alone in a room and just breathe together and not talk, or we can talk for 8 hours straight. It's just marvelous.
No, that's amazing. I'm so glad you found her.
Have found her.
It's so serendipitous to hear how everything is just so interconnected in your life, and having all those letters, and then you ended up meeting your soulmate, if you will, and that particular part of the journey as well. I mean, it's just absolutely phenomenal.
I'm convinced that our minds are magnets. I mean, they're electromagnetic anyway, the way the impulses fire and all that. But I really believe that our minds are magnetic, and we attract not what we want, but we attract what we are. In other words, the levels we're at internally, spiritually, we manifest that in front of us in the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
And we direct our movie. A lot of people say, "Oh, it was an accident," or "this happened to me." But I really believe that we direct the movie from the inside out. And the longer I live on this earth, I really see that happening. And I tell people that, number one, know what you want and really know that. And then, you know, just like coming out of Jeremiah Johnson, look at the universe just beaming out there. And then when you find, you know, when you follow your bliss, when you find your purpose and passion, when you radiate that energy, which life really is energy, then people have no choice. Mm-hmm. When you're on fire, then to get the closed doors out of your way, because yes. It almost becomes hypnotic in a point, because mm-hmm. they want a piece of it. They want to get caught up in that love. And it has nothing to do with me or you, but we're channeling. We're tapping into that love energy that's there in the universe. That's when mm-hmm. we all vibrate the highest, and that's where the, quote, miracles occur.
Yes. Hey, you're right. And I think it starts from listening to what path you're supposed to go. I mean, we can come down to a very physiological or very visceral response. You know, you were saying about for you, it's in your solar plexus. I think a lot of people, that's where it starts to resonate. You know, for whatever reason, that's just where many people that I've spoken with have said that's where they feel it as well. And so I think when we can use that kind of as a metric in everything we do, if we feel a certain way and we're kind of aware of what that physiological response is, to use that as a barometer to say, you know, kind of like that little game we played as kids, you know, the hot and cold game. The closer to get something, the hotter it gets. And so the closer you get to where you're supposed to go, the more you feel that feeling. And so I think when we can really take that moment to stop and think and to really figure out what it is to hear that voice or to feel that feeling in everything we do, that's how our life starts to become more magical. That's how it starts to become more divinely appointed. And the serendipity of life happens around us. And then it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then all of a sudden we're in a place like, oh my gosh, how in the world did I get here?
Right.
Well, Michael, unfortunately, our time is up, but I wanted to thank you so much. I mean, there's so much, obviously, we didn't get to. I mean, I know that some of the things I've read on your website is you have maybe even a television series that's coming up. I know you're on the Oprah Winfrey Show. I know you have another book. I mean, there's so many things you've done, so many accolades, but I really am appreciative just to hear your story itself and just to hear that joy, that bliss that you're experiencing as you tell your whole life story. And I know, like I said, there's so much more we could discuss, but I want to thank you so much for being on my show.
You know what's amazing is this interview went so far and so deep thanks to your incredible guiding questions. And I really feel that you and I are kindred spirits, because when you vibrate on that similar plane, time-space continuum disappears. I know we probably talked for half an hour or more, but it seemed like 3 seconds or 3 minutes.
It was a wonderful interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And you're doing great things. You're an avatar on this earth, and your show is just fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Now, if my listeners wanted to find out more information about you, where would they find your information online?
Well, you know, my name is so long and kind of hard to spell or pronounce, but if they just jump on Amazon.com and I type two words, which is two separate words, which is wildlife, the title of my latest book, it'll take them to my author page that lists all my social media and website and all that.
Okay, perfect. We can do that. And also on the introduction to this podcast, I'll have your information on there as well so they can read it there too.
Oh, thank you so much.
I'd also like to thank you, the listener, for joining with me today. Please subscribe to this podcast, either through iTunes or through whichever podcast portal you joined with me today. Also, please visit my website, jamesmillerlifeology.com. You may enroll in the Lifeology Academy I created. They're self-directed courses for successful people just like you. You may also see all the Lifeology YouTube episodes I've created. Currently, there are over 135 episodes for you to watch. And also on my website, you may find many other tools and techniques which will help you simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. Have an amazing week, and I'll talk to you very soon.